The Justin Robert Young Podcast is brought to you, as always, by your good friends at The Contender, thecontender.us. Go ahead and buy the game that everybody's talking about, man. Summer's coming up. You got a lot of time with friends and family out there by the beach, by the lake, right? Huh? You're going to have a good time. You're going to want something to play, and The Contender is what you should do it. As we record this live right now on DiamondClub.tv, some of the fabulous ladies who support not only this show, but also everything else that we do, up to and including Jackie Hearn and Hot Beverages, are playing this right now. You want to know why? Because it is not only a fun game to play, it's a fun game to watch. Be a part of the movement, thecontender.us, 2016 expansions on their way to you within the next few weeks. So buy yours now so you can get them like all the cool kids. And by patreon.com/JURY. That is where you go ahead and support this show. We have had just a bunch of people support this over the last few weeks. I mean, right now, you know, it always has a little bit of a dip around the first of the first of the month. That's always a thing that happens. However, I have noticed a lot more new patrons coming in. Thank you guys so much. We are only $95 away from doing the first ever Jury in Your House tour. And it's, man, I'm super excited. This is going to be something that we're going to talk a little bit more about during the show. But if you want to support not only this program, but also my politics show, Politics, 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 then go ahead on over patreon.com/JURY. But enough talking about the show. What do you say we go ahead and do it for a change? Unless you are in your car, and I want you to clap your hands twice. I want you to record it on Twitter and then at me, Justin R. Young, and let me know that we have a bunch of people around the world together as one clapping, not once, but twice, because that is how you know it is time. It is time for another Justin Robert Young podcast. My name is Justin Robert Young, fresh off a little bit of traveling. Now, I mean, for those of you who have been with us for a long time, the idea that I would be out there on the road is really not anything new. In fact, it has been odd that I haven't been traveling for those of you who have been with us for a very long time. However, the bad old days were back this week because I was out on the road in New Orleans. I got a bunch of fun stories that I want to talk to you guys about. But first, let me just get this out there. This is going to be an amazing summer. I last summer, remember, had a time around this time of the year when I realized that if I didn't get my my organizational life together, that I would either be by the end of the summer married, happy, and wealthy, or dead. And luckily, we survived. We survived. And I don't know if wealthy would be necessarily where we are at, but you know, certainly comfortable, more comfortable than we were at the beginning of last summer. So financial goals achieved. Married, checked out that ring. And alive, well, listen, unless some bizarre rune ritual reanimated the corpse of old Justin Robert Young, then yes, I am here talking to you as I live and breathe. But this summer, oh man, all summer 16, listen to a lot of Drake lately, we are going to have a hell of a time. We got a ton of live shows. We got a ton of fun new projects that are kind of cropping up. Obviously, we've had a lot of fun with the politics podcast. This is going to be a huge time for that. So I want to thank everybody who has supported this show, because it kind of hit me while I was in New Orleans and I realized that I was doing a lot of the stuff that I had done in tandem with other larger corporations for myself, that I realized, you know, what we've built here is something special. And I say we, not as the royal we, meaning me, but rather the we of everybody else who's listening. And that's why it matters so much to me that we have so many people writing in every single week trying to pitch their city to the Jury in Your House tour, that I continue to see new patrons come in and support this program, because I want to give it back. I want to give it back. Like, not money. The money is here for me, right? But, like, I want to give whatever you're paying for back to you. I want that to be money well spent, and I am so excited that so many people have agreed that it is thus far, so we can get to this point, and hopefully we can continue to march upward and onward. Let's talk about New Orleans. So New Orleans is a city in Louisiana. That's definitely a thing. That's something that everybody knows about. So that's fun. It also played host to the Collision Conference this week. The Collision Conference is a tech conference that is you know, I covered for Daily Tech News Show. And you can listen to this week's Tuesday edition of Daily Tech News Show to get a sense of kind of what goes on there. But more specifically, it represented, for me, a paid opportunity to do something that I thought I had left behind, that I had thought was no longer a part of my life, meaning journalism, reporting, going somewhere and having to talk about it, write about it, and put it out into the general populace. That was something that I got my degree in, was kind of like what I believed I would always be doing up through, really, even 3 years of college, 2 years of college. And then this idea of comedy kind of came up, and it has led me down a Byzantine path, Plinko-like, not Plinkett.
Pizza rolls.
Not Plinkett, Plinko, like The Price is Right, bouncing hither and non around random pegs until eventually we have landed here. But what I thought was going to be my life, I found again to be part of it. So I'm contemplating this last Monday. I'm leaving Monday night. And I'm like, wow, I'm going to be a journalist. Let me just go ahead. It was like, and I'm sure there are people that are in the audience that understand this feeling when all of a sudden you got to dust off some old skills, right? Because it's not like Liam Neeson in Taken. It's not like you just, like, you know, snap right back into it. You just kind of have to rummage around in your brain and, like, find whatever old, like, you know, a reel-to-reels or old floppy disks that contained all the memories of what you used to do about this, that, and the other, and plug them in and find out what you should be doing. So, that's what I did. And it's Monday morning. I leave Monday night. Journalist. Okay. What does a journalist do? All right, well, I'm going to need to write down some questions. Yeah, okay, yeah, that's good. Write down some questions. You never usually do that when you're doing podcast interviews, because it's far more conversational, and the art of conversation is more than the information extracted. So you got to kind of think about that. Like, okay, well, what do I want to get out? How do I want to shape the conversation? How do I want it to go? Oh, wait, hold on. If I'm physically in front of somebody, then my physical appearance matters. Oh, no. Oh, no. And it was at that point that I realized, oh, Jesus, along this sojourn of going from a sketch comedian to a jack of all trades to a reality television writer to a independent podcaster to a team builder for which people pay thousands of dollars to have me walk out in a Nora jumpsuit and talk to them, among none of those professions is there a premium on a clean shirt. So I got plenty of clean shirts. The only problem is that very often those clean shirts really only have one of two things written on them. Either a logo for a podcast that me or my friends have done, or a wrestling insignia logo saying. Which is why it's very, very, very prescient now that I did not set this up, that I am wearing in front of you, for those of you watching on YouTube, youtube.com/JustinRYoung, I am wearing a shirt for the Matt Men podcast, a podcast that a friend of mine puts on about professional wrestling. I got no shirts. I got very few dress shirts. I have very few dress shirts for which aren't like formal dress shirts. I don't have tech blogger chic. I don't got it. I just don't have it in my closet. Oh, geez. All right. All right. All right. Think. Okay. I always see my buddy Steve Kovac, a brilliant editor for TechInsider.com. He's always talking about going to Uniqlo. Uniqlo. Okay. That's where, apparently it's where hip young professionals go to shop. Steve's like 5 years younger than me. So let me just go there. Let me go and do that. Let me go get hip young tech blogger clothing. So it is as if I am now like trying to walk in to a random civilization and fit in with the locals. Because again, like it has almost been a point of pride over the past decade that I have tried to look as slovenly as possible. That I have tried to be as a big of a crummy mess as possible. So I could, I guess let the work speak for itself or whatever any lame excuse I gave myself for just not shaving. Anyway, I go and I buy these clothes and I decide that I'm going to also get some new equipment. Now, this kind of factors into a later story, but I feel like at that point I am now prepared. I have my sword, my shield, and my armor, and I am ready. I am ready to go out into the great yonder and cover this conference. I'm going to do right by DTNS. I'm going to do right by myself. I'm going to do right by my education. I'm going to do right by the Syracuse University S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communication. Which is what sets up our story so brilliantly for when everything begins to fall apart. You know the funniest thing about me shouting out the S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communication is that, like, I know it comes off as super douchey, you know, to, like, shout out not only the university but also the school for which your Northeastern private school education came from. But it's one of those things where it's like, Brian and I have had this conversation, a long-running conversation, that like at some point it doesn't matter in what context you say something. If you say something, you are ultimately the person who says it. We refer to it as referencing a Rosie O'Donnell gaffe from years ago where she was saying that a thing she said wasn't racist about Asians because she didn't say ching chong bling blong ding dong. That it doesn't matter what your context is. You just said ching chong bling blong ding dong. You're the one who said ching chong bling blong ding dong. And so that's why whenever we get into this, the shorthand for saying something in the proper context and yet still getting burnt for it is ching chong bling blong ding dong. And I know that in my head, what I think is I am being, it's a parody of hoity-toity Northeasterners who shout out their school. But yet I just realized, no. I am coming off as a hoity-toity New Englander. Now, I give you this primer of affluence as a hand-up guard, because what I'm going to tell you, I know to many people, is going to come off as alien. It's going to come off as terrible, and you're going to listen to this story and say, why do I want to listen to this? It is just you bragging. It is just you pointing out elements of your life for which are alien to me, if not alienating. I think less of you because you feel the need to share this, and I will only ask you to stay with me. If you watch this this week's episode of Night Attack, then you will understand where we were going. But I know that there are people who do not listen to Night Attack, and I've always felt that this would be a good story for jury anyway. So I'm heading to the airport after my little trip for tech and clothes. And I've decided that I will get a red-eye flight. A red-eye flight. If you're not familiar with the terminology of a red-eye flight, it is when you take a flight that effectively takes you through when you should be sleeping. So you're going to leave whenever you are going west to east. You are going through basically your entire sleep cycle because you are always going to be gaining time. It only takes 3 hours to get across the country. It will after the time zone change. Be 7 hours for your own internal clock. Now, as a general rule, I don't like red eyes. When I flew professionally, I never took red eyes, or I rarely took red eyes, and only a last resort situation did I take them, because they are very often a far better idea on paper. Something that I learned, and this is good for all the young kids out there, whenever you think that there's a really great idea about, like, staying up all night, it's never a good idea. Get whatever sleep you can get always, ever, right? If the difference is, I'll just stay up. Never. Never just stay up. It's always a terrible idea. And so, with red-eye flights, it's the same thought. If you can get 4 hours of sleep in your bed, 3 hours of sleep in your bed, and then wake up and then get plane sleep on the way somewhere on the first flight out, it's better for you ultimately than getting only 3 hours on a flight. Now, this is double when your plane flight, which is never exactly restful, even for people who are good at sleeping on planes like I am, is heightened by the fact that in your head, you're thinking, well, that's it for the day. I guess I'll just, you know, enjoy myself. And what does it mean to enjoy oneself in an airport? Well, friends, it means a trip to the United Club, wherein they have now put Prosecco on the free menu. Now, a lot of you might be saying, Justin, what the hell's Prosecco? Prosecco is a sparkling white wine. Very similar to what one might call champagne. Champagne, of course, being a regional taxonomy, as the grapes are grown in the Champagne region of France. However, a free Prosecco on the menu at the United Club opens a lot of things up. Number one, you can just get a bubbly whenever you want. Number two, if you're taking a morning flight, you can get mimosas. I've been very excited since this became a reality, and whenever I go to the United Club, I almost feel obligated to walk on up to the bar and say, give your boy a glass of bubbly. Now understand that this is where I'm sure many of you are feeling alienated and that I'm being a hoity-toity POS. Don't worry. Stay in. it gets better. Because I go from the United Club after drinking not one but two glasses of Prosecco on to the airplane, where I am sat in first class. Another glass of red wine, please, I say to the stewardess, who makes her way back and dutifully gives me exactly what I was asking for. I am sat next to a very stout, well-built gentleman. And we have a great conversation for the hour, flight, and change on down to Los Angeles. He apparently had lived in a lot of the same places that I did. Grew up in Rochester, in central New York, where I went to school at Syracuse. Lived in South Florida. Then moved out to Atlanta, and now lives in Los Angeles as an interior decorator. Oh, where the conversation ranged. Another red wine, please. We were talking about how in Atlanta, I had always heard of the perimeter, which is, I guess, a gathering of highways that go around the city that cool folks in Atlanta don't ever want to go OTP or outside the perimeter. I've always heard that about Atlanta. What I didn't know is in the gay community, it is called the Fruit Loop. I found that funny. Another glass of red wine, please. Oh, we start laughing. He moves to L.A., right? And he, I'm like, how do you make your way in interior decorating? A freelance interior decorator? Where do you even start on day one? He says, well, first things first, you get a gym membership. What? Is that where all the hierarchy of interior decorator gay Los Angeles meets? Is that where you can put yourself into the mix and eventually ascend the power structure? No. It's where all the rich housewives who have nothing to do take yoga classes. So if you can be the only dude in a class of a bunch of 40-year-old women, trophy wives who have more money than sense, and you can be their gay best friend, as soon as the topic gets to, oh, so what do? I interior decorate. Oh, my God, we have so much work that needs to be done. Real smart. Another glass of red wine, please. Oh, we're just best friends. We, you know, high five on the way out, and I make my way to the Los Angeles United Club, because that's where I'm connecting on the way to New Orleans. Now, here's where I will remove myself as the narrator of this story and let you know that Justin had made a terrible mistake, because the one rule about a red-eye flight is ABS, always be sleeping. I was on a plane for an hour and a half that should have been an hour and a half nap. Should have knocked out for an hour and a half, because you have very, very precious little time to sleep. You need to be sleeping as much as possible. You need to sleep on the plane. You need to get to LAX. You need to find a place in the United Club. You need to lie down. You need to sleep there. You need to wake up. You need to get on this other flight. You need to sleep there. If you are not prepared to be up and going by the time that you land on that red eye, my friend, you will be screwed. And so I screwed myself by not taking that hour and a half nap. But you want to know what? It's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. Or at least that's what I'm telling myself, because I'm already pretty drunk. So I make my way to another United Club. I make my way. I order not one, but two glasses of red wine. And they close the United Club. We are now closing at 10:30. You've all been there. Am I right? Come on. You're on a red-eye cross-country flight, and all of a sudden they're closing your private airline club. The nerve. Again, if you're alienated by this part of the story, just wait. Just wait. So, of course, by the divine providence of the Creator himself, there's another United Club just a few gates down. Oh, hallelujah. Make my way up to that United Club, and I again get not one, but two glasses of the Prosecco. Delightful. Now, I want you to imagine this next visual, and I want you to keep it in your head. I'm going to ask you to recall it in a second. It is me in an executive stance, glass of bubbly in hand, looking out onto the tarmac of the Los Angeles airport, and I am just contemplating the vastness of life. The true meaning of hard work, ding, and success.
Yes, this is industry. This is achievement. This is my life.
And then I imagine, like, some orchestral swell, but like a military swell, and then a bald eagle goes flying behind me. Pretty wasted at this point, as you might imagine. I make my way down to my flight to go to New Orleans. I am again sat in first class. I order a beer, and just to ensure that I would have a hangover, I'd been drinking wine all evening, and then I switched at the very, very last moment to beer. And that's when it happened. Man, life was good. Life was sweet. But there is no joy in Mudville, because my evening slash morning rapidly went downhill. When the intercom crackles alive and says, "Welcome to United Flight. Our flight to New Orleans will take 3 hours and 15 minutes.
What?
Rewind that. Our flight to New Orleans will take 3 hours and 15 minutes.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. We let it get out of hand. We let it get out of control. We forsook sleep. We instead were drinking all night. No. No. There's only 3 hours. I have 3 hours until I need to be up. I have 3 hours until I need to be functional. All right. All right. All right. Calm down. Calm down. Everything's going to be fine. Okay? Sure. It's going to be rough getting back. It's going to be rough getting back there. That's fine. It's going to be rough getting up after the flight. That's fine. You're probably going to still be drunk. That's fine. You certainly are very happy that you didn't get a rental car, because you would have been legally drunk driving. Okay, that's fine. Good news. Didn't get a rental car. You're going to get in a taxi. You're going to get to your hotel. That's fine. That's fine. That's fine. But whatever, I got to get to sleep now. I got to get to sleep now. I got to get to sleep. And it's that quick. It's that quick that I am in New Orleans. I have never had a plane flight go faster than the one that took me from Los Angeles International Airport to MSY in New Orleans. Oh, my God, so fast. Nightcrawler fast. Bam. Oh, I'm in a rough spot, man. I am in a rough spot. I can barely see straight. I got blurred vision. I'm staggering. I'm just like, I just got to get to a cab. Just got to get to a cab. Find a cab. I just throw him everything that's in my pockets. Just get me to where I'm going. Get me to where I'm going. Drives all the way down. Drives to my hotel. Now, it's at that point that I realize that I am not in a Radisson. I'm not in a Marriott. I'm not in a Hilton. I am not in an extended stay. I'm not in an Embassy Suites. I'm not in a Red Roof Inn. I'm not in a Motel 6. I'm at a place called St. Vincent's Guest House in the Garden District of New Orleans. Garden District isn't necessarily a rough part of the city. It is, however, where a week and a half ago, a former NFL player was shot in cold blood. Literally a block from the hotel. When I describe St. Vincent's Guest House, you can go ahead and look it up on the internet. But it is a bit of a menacing structure. It's an older structure, very much of fitting into the architectural milieu of its neighborhood. But here's one thing that it's not. Lit. It is an ominous, dark structure. And I very much enjoyed the staff that was working there, but if I might go ahead and describe them physically so I can paint a picture with my words to you, I would describe them as all pouring out of one van at a String Cheese Incident concert. Nice people. I walk up to the front desk, and I do something that I've done every other time that I've gotten a red eye. I walk to the hotel and the desk, and I say, "Hey, can I get my room early? Is there a way that I can get in early?"
I'm checking in today. If you have an empty room, is there any way I can just get in early? This has worked for me 10 out of 10 times. And I don't mean that, like, I've done it 10 times. I've probably done it 5, but you get my meaning. It's never failed. Okay, man. Okay, yeah. Okay, man. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Yeah, all right. No. What? Well, wait. Hold on. Let me check this other thing. Okay, come on. Listen, there's got to be a room. There's gonna be a room. I'll go to an empty room that's smaller than mine, like whatever. And I'm like, yeah, just go ahead and check for anything. I just need any place to lie down. I'm willing to pay extra to be able to lie down and have a bathroom. Oh, okay, man. Okay, man. Don't worry. All right. Hey, okay. Yeah. No. Well, there's nothing here. Oh. No. Really? Really? There's nothing. I'm carrying both my bags. I've got technical equipment as well as all my fine new clothes. I'm sure that that glass of Prosecco, that final glass of Prosecco, is still swirling around my bloodstream. It's opulence mocking my continued just humiliation. He says, well, you want to know what? There's a day room you can just go ahead and sleep in. Like just a couch? Yeah, man, a couch. Fine, whatever, I'll take it. He's like, yeah, you know, people will check out in the morning. Maybe you can get in later. So I go, I fall asleep for a couple hours. I wake up, then I ask him, hey, man, anything else? No. It's between that conference that you're here for and Jazz Fest, we're totally sold out, and we're definitely not going to have anything open until at least 11 o'clock. Mind you, it's 8 o'clock in the morning at this point. So I realize now for the first time that the conference that I'm here to cover, that I'm here to be a professional journalist for, has begun in earnest. Like, the first bit of programming is at 8 o'clock. I'm on the clock now. I need to be there. So I tell the man, listen, I just need a shower. Is there any place where I can get a shower? I don't care about whether it's my room. I don't care about if it's smaller or bigger. And he's like, oh, you just need a shower? Yeah. Cool, man. Well, just follow me to the dorms. The what? The dorms. The what? The dorms, man. Now, again, I've been a professional traveler. For 4 years, I have never stayed in a hotel that also had dorms. And meanwhile, they're not dorms, i.e. college residences. They're like, it's a hostel, but apparently they don't want to call it a hostel, so they call it a dorm. There's a couple group showers. Just don't worry. Go ahead. So he lets me in, and there are indeed two different rooms, with two different shower stalls. And it's at that point that I make a few terrifying realizations. Number one, how happy I am, because I am going to again feel like some element of human. So I'm pretty actually psyched about this. Number two, when I turn the nozzle, I realize that only cold water is coming out and it's not getting warmer. And number three, I realize that among all the reliances that I've made on staying at decent hotels for the past 4 years, and by decent, I mean Red Roof Inn and above, there's never been a hotel that hasn't had complimentary shampoo and conditioner. So I very rarely bring shampoo and conditioner, nor soap. Right? Soap's usually a pretty common standard at hotels. Not in the dorms of the St. Vincent's guest house. So there I am. There I am. So let's go back. Remember that image that I wanted you to think about? That image that I wanted you to burn in your brain? That image of me
in my executive pose with my traveler jacket on and my my glass of Prosecco, staring out into the metropolis of Los Angeles and the tarmac from which is the corridor, the beating heart of the world, interacting with one of America's great achievements, something that I was a part of. Compare and contrast that to me, naked and shivering, as I realize that I need to steal some other poor traveler's body wash bottle from the other stall and going tiptoeing out shivering and naked to the other stall so I can steal just a squirt of his body wash so I can feel anything close to a human. I want you to realize that in those moments, there is true joy of having lived. There's also two more things that you should always remember, and that is shriveling, receding balls. Man, I had a bunch more that I wanted to talk about before we got into the email. However, I don't think I'll be able to do it because we do have a hard out here. But real quick, let me just say, because it's going to be old by the time that next week comes around. Larry Wilmore, who is the host of The Nightly Show on Comedy Central, he was the replacement for Stephen Colbert when he went to CBS. He did the correspondence dinner, or as it's called effectively in DC circles, Nerd Prom. I personally agree with Jenny Josephson of Marketplace when she tweeted that, listen, it's not Nerd Prom unless there's somebody dressed as Venom. And a very grumpy George R. R. Martin. Those are the Nerd Proms that I tend to cotton with, but I can understand where they want to appropriate the name. It's pretty catchy. Larry Wilmore does the keynote there. That has been a very weird position over the past few years because as political comedy has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, you have more of an onus for the comedians who, by and large, have a bit of their stock and trade in speaking truth to power to kind of be meaner and meaner, to tell the truth, quote unquote. Tell the truth. And Larry Wilmore came in, like, swinging from the get, dude, was just throwing haymakers. Now, the jokes were fairly well done, but he got a terrible reaction in the room, and he's getting criticized in the press for it, and it made me think a lot about insult comedy. I don't have a whole big thing about this, but it's just a little thing that I was thinking about and I want y'all to think about. Insult comedy is very, very interesting because it not only, we always think about it as just the mean barbs, right? But really the best insult comedy is insulting somebody while also bringing other people on your side. It's not enough to single out a victim and wound them. You need to also have an audience that believes that is funny. And oftentimes that comes in when you are making fun of more than just the person. You make fun of somebody's haircut because it is something that wealthy people wear, right? You're making fun of somebody's race because that is something that has distinguishing elements that either are identifying to other members of the race itself or to other elements who are outside of the race that are now identifying or learning more of it. Now, you can see very obviously where these things can go sideways very quickly, which is why we tend to reward insult comedians. We believe that they have a skill greater than another person who just tells jokes. Jeffrey Ross is somebody that was just a comedian, but became kind of famous for being an insult comedian. So Larry Wilmore was very funny in terms of how effectively he wounded people.
he was not great at bringing people on his side, because he just started out by ripping television news and did not stop, and did not stop to say, hey, I love you guys, I want to make fun of you. And a lot of his jokes were just like, they weren't like funny, redeeming things. It was just like, you're bad at your job, LOL. Which I think you can get away with when there are people that are very obviously over the top. But it's like, he went after Wolf Blitzer, who, like, I don't think anybody's going to think that Wolf Blitzer is necessarily the pinnacle of journalism. But, you know, he went after him for being boring. And that's just, like, an actual criticism, right? Like who is going to say on the other end, ha 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 ha, he is boring, he sucks, right? Like, that's, it makes the audience feel bad and less willing to laugh at him, because you haven't identified a larger thing for which they can all glom onto. And also, it's like, you just got to make Wolf Blitzer eat it in front of all these people. Because, like, either he's got a giggle or he looks stone-faced. And he's like, all right, man, well, you don't like my show. That's fine. You know, I'm sure a lot of people can say, hey, look at your ratings. With, you know, when Stephen Colbert left, you have done worse. And that entire block of him and Trevor Noah have done a lot worse than when it was Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart. So it's like, it just gets into a really contentious thing. But it made me think a lot about insult comedy. I think it's very, very much worth watching. There were some really funny jokes in there. But, you know, Larry Wilmore, a lesson to us all. Let's get into our emails. JustinRobertYoung@gmail.com is where you can go to write us. Our first one comes in from Jake. This, again, is in the Jury in Your House Tour category. I'm going to do a three-night swing. As soon as we hit $700 on the Patreon, I'm going to do the first Jury in Your House Tour. I'm going to drive between three cities, and we've had pitches for the past several weeks about where you guys want me to go. Because, again, I need houses to do them at, so I need you guys to go ahead and pitch what cities you want to do. Jake writes, it's not the Jury way to do things small, so I believe it is in your nature to start this amazing adventure off with something no less than epic. I mean, Justin Robert Young either goes big or goes home. Here is my proposal. Let's get you and your faithful listeners the most bang for your buck and start your home tour off right. Visit my tri-state area. Oh. My tri-state area. Look at that. Look at that. He's being, you know, a little wink, wink. Because the tri-state area, more traditionally, is New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. The metro New York City area. But no, no, no. He says, day one, start things off in Cincinnati. I'm sure you've had many listeners around the Queen City that would love to host you for the event and a show at your above average time. Indeed, we have. Hot Beverages started this whole thing off, this courtship off, by saying that we should start things off in Cincinnati. So that's already on there. Day two, travel down the Bourbon Trail to my fine neck of the woods, Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville is certainly located, centrally located, so fans can come visit for a meetup. You can get set up wherever you need to do your show, and then we can kick back and enjoy all that the Derby City has to offer. And day three, enjoy your tri-state tour by heading up I-65 to good old Indianapolis. Once again, I'm sure you have some great listener in Indy that would be more than happy to accommodate. Louisville is the perfect place to start your tour because it's centrally located. You could easily substitute Cincy or Indy for Nashville. Both of the two proposed are less than 2 hours combined, and even Nashville's under three. This would satisfy so many of us Midwestern fans and really get you to start this thing off right. There you go. I threw my hat in the ring, and I'm looking forward to the potential of being part of the pool. I know this is stretching, but look at the route. It's basically half of the bracket for the Diamond Club funness. Tell you what, man, this is a pretty rad pitch. I do have a thing for Kentucky, man. I very much enjoy enjoy the southern vibe of Kentucky. So it's in there. It's in there. I like it. I like it. Paul writes about generational hate. I went on about that Dear Elders video last week. And Paul writes in, amazingly, this quote pretty much summarizes my feelings on the subject, and it is a famous quote. I will quote it for you now. The children now love luxury.
They have bad manners, contempt for authority, and they show disrespect for elders and love chatter in place of exercise. Children are now tyrants, not the servants of their household. They no longer rise when elders enter the room. They contradict their parents, chatter before company, gobble up dainties at the table, and cross their legs and tyrannize their teachers. End quote. And where does that quote come from? Socrates. So let's just say that old people have been hating on young people for as long as Socrates. Okay? This is not a new thing. It is the easiest way to pop an old person is by saying, man, kids my age, we just don't get it. We also had an email about this from Dennis. Dennis writes, listening to your breakdown of the Dear Elders video, I was struck by how the current generation is the only generation that the vast majority of the complaints don't apply to. I feel like the majority of the youth throughout time staked out their identity by ignoring the taboos of the previous generation. They use coarser language. And he adds, a footnote as defined by the previous generation, coarser music. Not always harder, just different, and different drugs and more lurid styles of clothing. In modern American history, at least that I'm aware of, and born in 1979, which as a child meant I was young for Gen X, but now that I think that places me at the back end of Gen X. This is the first generation that seems to be creating its identity not in breaking down the taboos of the previous generation, but in building up brand new taboos. From the outside, they appear to be building their duration around a hypercharged sense of empathy, and are busy building new speech and cultural taboos instead of breaking down their own. Not only is the lady in the video an ageist Uncle Tom, she also picked the only point in recent history in which her complaints don't apply to the target of their scorn. And I couldn't agree with you more. I could not agree with you more. I mean, again, this it just blows my mind that because you're right. The millennials, if anything, are far more open-hearted. They're so open-hearted that they're making videos criticizing themselves because old people feel bad. That's how much the millennials care. The millennials, if anything, they care too much. Too much. Too much of the caring. And finally, we got an email from Paul. Paul writes, I can think of few better people to ask than this. How do you know when you've overextended yourself? The obvious answer seems to be when you can't fulfill all of your commitments, but maybe I'm looking at it incorrectly. For context, I'm a full-time college student in Tokyo with rent and living expenses to pay. Student loans cover tuitions and fees. Tokyo, as you may have heard, is expensive. I found a furnished apartment for about $500 a month, but the trade-off is a 90-minute train commute from home to campus. I'm juggling 4 irregular web-based writing gigs that, when combined, pay the rent but nothing else. Teaching English is a steadier work and pays slightly better than something, and is something of a rite of passage for Anglophile gaijin like me. But the hours it requires would necessitate a wholesale rearranging of my class and work schedule. I'm used to something of a hectic schedule after 15-plus years in newspapers, and I've managed 2 months into my current setup. That said, experience has taught me that when I burn out hard, and it drags down all aspects of my life. There have been some very trying days, but my jerk brain keeps telling me that I could handle it if I managed my time better, lowered my expectations for grades, which is all A's this semester, and wasn't such a lazy bastard. What red flags do you look out for in your own life, and how do you differentiate between asking too much of yourself and merely having a busy schedule? So, number one, I'm the worst person to ask about this because I'm not good at monitoring these elements of my life. I tend to say yes to everything. But here's what I have found as I have gotten older. I don't judge my process. I judge my results. How happy am I with my results? If my results are suffering, then I have to make a change to the process because I'm never going to be good in the middle of things making those changes. I'm just not, and I know I'm not. I'm not in the middle of things saying, oh, I'm too stressed. Let me take a break. But I know that if the results aren't where I want them to be, then I just need to change how I do things. And very often, at that point, I can say, yeah, well, you want to know what? I need to take a breather here and again. But I have to have that thought going in, or else I will look at it as me quitting on myself and quitting on the project. Number two, how are you a productive person who still thinks that you need all A's in college?
C's got degrees, baby. There's never going to be a job that is going to look back at your GPA. All you need is a piece of paper from whatever institution. I know that culturally Tokyo may be different, but I will say this. Start relaxing on that schoolwork. Unless you're planning on going to grad school and you need that to apply, if this is your last stage of college, of organized education, then start sailing. Take me away from where I'm going. Like, you need to coast, baby. You need to knock it off. I'm going to say this to everybody. Everybody who's listening, all the youth of America and internationally, if you are in college right now and you are trying, you are a sucker. Find out how to get to C and stop caring. Anything else, anything higher, then great. Now, if you're trying to go to grad school, you're trying to go to medical school, you're trying to be a lawyer, fine. Yeah, if you're still trying to go to other elements for which those things are going to be taken under advisement, then yeah, no, try, of course. Try to do as best you can. If you're not, if you're at the end of your rope, the end of this journey, this educational journey, then understand that you have been hoodwinked your entire life. In kindergarten, it's not going to be like that when you get to middle school. Middle school, it's not going to be like that when you get to high school. It's not going to be like that when you get to college. And they keep beating you down. Every graduation day is just a day, a 0.01 of your next level. And all those grades are going to count, mister. Not in college. You're at the end. Break the spell. This isn't Stockholm Syndrome anymore. You are your own person. And you deserve to get a C when you want to do something else that's cooler and more important. Of course, everybody, you can email the show, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Remember to find this podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play now, the Google Play podcast store. This podcast is found on as well. Email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put jury in the subject line. Twitter and Instagram are Justin R. Young. Snapchat as well. And, of course, hashtag join the conversation at diamondclub.reddit.com. Rate and subscribe to the show if you are listening to it on any one of those stores. It helps us tremendously. Also, The Contender at thecontender.us. Go ahead and buy it. Live Night Attack in the Bay Area, May 7th. That is next Saturday at Piano Fight, beginning at 4 p.m. Ladies and gentlemen, if you find yourself wrecked from lack of sleep and alcohol, if you find yourself trying to dress up for Wolfram, for Stephen Wolfram, if you find yourself insulting when you should be getting applause, well, remember, my name is Justin Robert Young. I'm your pal, and I'm letting you know to please don't die. Good evening.
Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.